From national news in D.C.
to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol,
this is your Capitol Connection.
And now, bringing the Capitol to you,
here's your host, Nate Graz.
And welcome to the program. We are broadcasting today from the Nebraska Family Alliance Studio in Lincoln, talking about the issues that matter most, family, freedom, and life. We have got a lot to share on today's show, and it's all about what this show is about, keeping you connected to the Capitol from the Nebraska Capitol here in Lincoln, and what our state legislature has been up to, and what's the most important things that are coming out of the Capitol from the more than 400 bills that have been introduced already within the first 10 days of session. And we're also going to talk about what's been happening in Washington, D.C., and our nation's capital, where our very own senators from Nebraska, Deb Fischer and Ben Sasse, were both involved in some really important stuff and had some remarks that we're going to play on the show today, because we want the people of Nebraska and you, the listener, to be able to hear and know directly what our representatives are doing at the Capitol and how it affects you and your family. The decisions being made by lawmakers that will impact Nebraskans the most are what's happening at the Nebraska Capitol, where our state legislature is now in the second week. We're approaching day 10, which we will hit this upcoming week, and that is the deadline for senators to introduce new legislation. And already, we have seen over 400 bills introduced in the Nebraska legislature. That is a lot of legislation and a lot of reading that I've had the privilege of doing over this past week. And so if you're looking for something to read or put you to sleep before bed, just go to NebraskaLegislature.gov and you can read for yourself the more than 400 bills that have been introduced. So there's a lot that we could talk about or cover, things that would be of interest to different people throughout the state. But here are some of the more interesting ones that come to mind that people are passionate about or seem to have an interest in. Among the several hundred bills introduced this past week, teenagers under age 18 would be barred from using tanning salons under Legislative Bill 140 introduced by Omaha State Senator Rick Kalowski. LB 147, sponsored by North Platte Senator Mike Groney, would allow teachers to use physical force or removal on students to remove them from the classroom in response to student behavior. That is a bill that got a lot of attention and passionate debate on both sides, and it is likely to happen again this year. And this is a big one, LB 294. This is the state budget bill for the next 2 years, funding the entire state government for Nebraska. And this is introduced by the Speaker, Jim Scheer of Norfolk, at the request of the governor. So the budget bill starts as a recommendation from the governor with his outline and policy priorities for funding state government. And the reason that this bill is of interest and importance to Nebraska Family Alliance, obviously funding the state government, but it's one paragraph in this over 100-page bill that we're really focused on. And this provision at the bottom of page 48 in the state budget bill ensures that Nebraska's taxpayer dollars are not funding or subsidizing the abortion industry. This is about restricting Title X dollars, which is, again, taxpayer money that the state of Nebraska gets from the federal government every year. And this is something new under Governor Ricketts. This was a huge achievement. Last year, the legislature was able to secure this language and keep it in the budget to protect taxpayer dollars and unborn human life after multiple attempts to have it removed. It was the biggest debate of the whole year, came down to whether or not state senators felt that this taxpayer money should go to abortion providers. And the governor has once again inserted this language and made it a priority for his budget. And you can get all of the information on what Title X is, how it works, where this money comes from, where it goes, and how it has, in years past, been used to subsidize the abortion industry, all on our website at NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. And we'll be talking about this more as the year goes on and what people can do to help support this really important pro-life initiative. Again, it was a huge victory last year, and we want to make sure that it is reaffirmed this year in the state budget. And there's another bill in particular drawing a lot of attention and heated debate. It is LB 343, introduced by Hastings Senator Steve Halloran, which would authorize schools to allow employees to carry concealed handguns. So this bill would give schools the option, not requiring or mandating that teachers be armed, but giving individual schools and school districts the option, if they so choose, to allow their employees to carry concealed handguns. That bill, we are going to be hearing about this one all year long. That is for sure. Passionate debate all the way around. And there's another bill that's really interesting. It's actually a constitutional amendment, LR-11CA, which would amend the Nebraska Constitution to lower the age requirements for members of the legislature. Currently, you only need to be 21 years old, and this constitutional amendment would drop the age to 19. So if you are 19 years old in Nebraska, if this change to the Constitution was made, you could run and serve in our legislature. So we'll see what the current members of our legislature think about that proposal. And there's one more bill that I wanted to focus on and highlight on today's show. This is a really important and I think unique and innovative new bill that requires truth in state-sponsored gambling advertising, which you think would be a guarantee since this is a state program that is sponsoring the gambling. And thanks to this bill, a sensible pro-family bill introduced by State Senator Suzanne Geist of Lincoln, Nebraska lawmakers will have the opportunity to better alleviate poverty while also restoring honesty and transparency in state government. This comes in the form of LB 252, which combats the prevalent dishonesty in state-sponsored gambling by requiring the state lottery to clearly display the odds of winning the prize being advertised. So in other words, the state lottery, which again is a government program sponsored by the state of Nebraska, would actually have to tell citizens the truth about the gambling they're promoting. And honesty and transparency are two things lawmakers on both sides of the aisle talk about frequently. Yet the state of Nebraska, as a government program, continues to actively encourage citizens to make decisions that are contrary to their best interests in order to fleece the state's own citizens out of their hard-earned money. The more you think about the state lottery and who's sponsoring it and what it does and where the money is coming from, who's buying these lottery and scratch tickets, and then what happens with that money, it really starts to not make a whole lot of sense to think that our state government is actively trying to persuade and encourage our own citizens to go spend their money on games, a gambling scheme that is designed for them to lose, especially when less than 25% of that money that the lottery brings in actually goes back to the state of Nebraska. Less than 25%. And yet, as a government program, Nebraska spent nearly $5.5 million in 2017 promoting and advertising the state lottery. And the problem with this is that the continuous large-scale advertising on billboards, television, radio, and social media telling people how fun, easy, and life-changing it can be to buy lottery and scratch tickets, which, again, are not coming from a private company. It's coming from your state government. They're selling false hope to people. And what research has shown and continues to show is that the poor and impoverished are the primary players of the state lottery. And they are doing so because they have been led to believe that they're not playing for fun or entertainment. They're buying the tickets because they believe that it is a legitimate strategy towards achieving financial well-being and their best chance to escape poverty. And if that's the best we can do, if that's the best we can offer people, I think that's really sad. Because in doing so, we are financially and socially damaging individuals and their families, those who can least afford to buy the lottery tickets. In fact, according to the state of Nebraska's own Gamblers Assistance Program, lottery advertising often attracts the poor who can least afford the money to pay for a lottery ticket. That is a direct quote from the state's own Gamblers Assistance Program. And then you have another state program that is doing the advertising. And while lottery advertising might seem harmless or simply obnoxious, I see it everywhere all the time, studies have again continued to show that the poor are the primary lottery players, and citizens are playing the lottery because they believe it is the best way to build wealth or escape poverty. For example, research had demonstrated that lotteries are not only inefficient, regressive, and exploitive taxes, but the poorest third of Americans buy more than half of all lottery tickets. And another reason that people should care regardless of whether you ever gamble or buy lottery tickets or not, lottery revenue comes largely from Social Security, unemployment, and other forms of government support. So in other words, government is paying government, with an enormous amount being siphoned off by gambling interest. 2 out of 5 low-income Americans believe the lottery is the best way to build wealth. Citizens reduce their spending on key household items when they play the lottery, and ultimately, gambling worsens long-term budgetary problems for states rather than helping. So the tens of millions of dollars that are being siphoned away but from Nebraskans every year by the lottery could be better spent buying life-sustaining goods and services, saved for a child's or family's future, or supporting local businesses and helping grow our economy. And yet, knowing all of this to be true, the state of Nebraska spent nearly $5.5 million advertising and promoting the lottery in 2017 alone. So I hope lawmakers take a serious look at this bill. It already has bipartisan support from senators who have co-signed the bill. And really, I think that it puts Nebraskans first instead of gambling interests, because quite simply, no state program should mislead or prey upon their own citizens. And telling people the truth about their odds of winning a prize from a state-sponsored gambling scheme is a basic accountability measure based in honesty and transparency. It's really about striking a better balance between the interests of the state in protecting the health and well-being of citizens with the interests of the state lottery. And the best way I can summarize this is actually from a quote that I found from Arthur Brooks, who is the president of the American Enterprise Institute, a conservative free market think tank out in Washington, D.C. And this is what he has said and written about state lotteries. Quote, "Politicians who profess a desire to alleviate poverty often lament how few levers they have to pull. So here's a novel idea. Stop selling poor people a mirage of the American dream at the end of a convenience store line." I think that's exactly right, and there's specific guidelines in the bill to make sure that that disclosure of what the odds of winning actually are truly clear and conspicuous and not just buried or hidden at the bottom of the advertisement. So those are some of the bills to watch out for, and I'm sure that we'll be hearing more about in the news in the coming weeks and months. And the other big item, an important update from the Capitol this past week here in Lincoln, was Governor Ricketts' State of the State address. Governor Ricketts delivered his speech on the State of the State last Tuesday, and I was there to listen to the governor's State of the State. And what I found so interesting and really important is there are so many things that the governor could say in a State of the State address. And he talked a lot about property tax reform and his proposals and ideas for helping grow Nebraska, create new opportunities, economic development. But it was very clear that the governor made being pro-life and pro-life values a key item in provision and theme in his speech. He went out of his way to thank State Senator Joni Albright for introducing the abortion pill reversal legislation that we talked about last week, and he highlighted and talked about the importance of the pro-life Title X provision in his state budget that I mentioned at the top of the show. And so I'm going to play a short clip of what Governor Ricketts had to say about representing and working on behalf of pro-life Nebraska.
As I've noted before, Nebraska is a pro-life state. My budget contains the pro-life language approved by the body last year. Furthermore, I want to commend Senator Albright for her continued work to protect the dignity of the unborn life. I look forward to working with all of you this session as we represent Pro-Life Nebraska and look for new ways to support expecting mothers and unborn children.
And if that weren't enough to highlight and talk about on the show today, the following day, last Wednesday, Governor Ricketts also hosted and had a proclamation signing to commemorate National Religious Freedom Day. And I had the privilege of being there with Nebraska Family Alliance. It was a terrific celebration, and the governor delivered fantastic remarks talking about the true meaning of separation of church and state and the value and importance of our First Amendment freedoms in this country. In fact, there was a range of different pastors, clergy, and a whole variety of organizations that represent a diverse group of individuals and faiths gathered in the state capitol to express their support for this commemorating event and this proclamation signing. Our executive director at NFA, Karen Bowling, said, quote, "Religious liberty is one of America's founding principles, a sacred human right guaranteeing you the freedom of conscience to practice your deeply held beliefs without fear of government punishment." And that's exactly right. Religious freedom is the right to live and work according to one's beliefs. And this freedom is for everyone. Everyone, not just on Sunday mornings or within the four walls of a church, every single day. The First Amendment guarantees that no one, regardless of their beliefs, is bullied by the government or coerced into retreating from civil and political life. And as President Reagan so famously said, freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. And that's why these things matter. We have to keep talking about the importance and value of religious freedom. And this event at the state capitol last week, commemorating Religious Freedom Day, was a great way to do so. And you can find more information and learn more about Religious Freedom Day and what took place at the capitol over at NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. We also wanted to talk about what's been happening out at our nation's capital with our two senators from Nebraska, both dealing with some really important topics this past week. And coinciding with Religious Freedom Day last Wednesday, on the Senate floor, Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse led an effort to reaffirm religious liberty and condemn religious tests for federal officials. And if you're wondering why that even needed to be done, well, unfortunately, several members of the United States Senate have began engaging in really lines of questioning that would on their face appear to violate that important tradition enshrined in our Constitution, ensuring that there is no religious test for holding office. And thankfully, the Senate unanimously adopted the resolution rebuking the recent anti-Catholic lines of questioning from Judiciary Committee Democrats. And this was brilliant for a number of reasons, because essentially what this vote was, it was not only reaffirming religious liberty and condemning religious tests for federal office, which it was, it also was really rebuking, even by members of their own party, very directly, the senators who were engaging in this inappropriate line of questioning, because this isn't a Republican belief, this isn't a Democrat belief, this is an American belief, as Senator Sasse said. This is a basic point. There are no religious tests. If someone has a problem with the resolution, what other parts of the Constitution are you also against? Freedom of the press, women's right to vote, freedom of speech. It shouldn't be hard. No religious tests. And Senator Sasse drove this point home during his speech to the rest of the United States Senate. Take a listen.
I rise today to offer a very basic resolution. I want senators to unanimously reaffirm our oath of office to a constitution that rejects religious bigotry. It is useful to regularly remind ourselves that Americans are a First Amendment people. Each of the five freedoms in the First Amendment, speech, press, religion, assembly, protest, they define who we are. In America, we talk, we read, we argue, we write, we march, and we pray, we worship, without fear. Because of this fundamental celebration of human dignity and of human freedom, America is big enough to welcome a whole bunch of meaty and messy fights on everything from who you vote for to who you call God. And just as the First Amendment prohibits the government from dictating anyone's religious beliefs, so too, the Constitution explicitly rejects religious tests for federal office. Our Constitution explicitly rejects federal tests for federal office. This isn't a Republican belief. This isn't a Democratic belief. This is an American belief. But tragically, over the last couple of years, some strange things have been happening in this body, and we seem to be forgetting some of those basic 101 American civics truths.
Senator Sasse is right. This shouldn't be hard. No religious tests for federal office. Good for Senator Sasse for standing up to these blatant unconstitutional lines of questioning that certain members in the United States Senate were attempting to use in order to block or discredit judicial nominees. and it was great to see the resolution unanimously confirmed by the U.S. Senate, reaffirming the Senate's commitment to the Constitution and to religious freedom. Senator Sasse also announced last week that he is sponsoring and reintroducing the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. The National March for Life took place at our nation's capital out in D.C. last Friday, and Senator Sasse, in recognition of that event, made an announcement that he was bringing back this bill, saying that, quote, "Everybody loves babies, and that love has nothing to do with politics and everything to do with just having a heart. This legislation is an opportunity for Congress to find consensus built on common sense, compassion, science, and a simple fact. Every baby deserves a fighting chance at life. Providing care for newborns is more important than partisan political divides. Every baby has dignity. Every baby deserves protection and love." Senator Sasse said that current federal law does not adequately protect a child who survives an abortion. According to NTV, a statement from Senator Sasse's office said that the legislation requires, when an abortion results in the live birth of an infant, healthcare practitioners must exercise the same degree of professional skill and care to protect the newborn as would be offered to any other child born alive at the same gestational age. That is common sense, life-affirming policy, and thank you to Senator Sasse for prioritizing that bill and bringing it to the United States Senate once again. It needs to happen. And our other United States Senator, the senior senator from Nebraska, Deb Fischer, also delivered a powerful speech on the Senate floor last week in support of all of the Nebraskans and all Americans who participated in the Walk for Life in Washington, D.C. This is what Senator Fischer had to share last week.
I rise today in support of the thousands of people who will travel to our nation's capital this week to join us in the March for Life. Marching proudly among them will be many, many Nebraskans, families, neighbors, student organizations, and church groups. They're going to brave the snow and the freezing temperatures to march along the National Mall as part of a peaceful rally that draws attention to pro-life and pro-women policies. Since I first started my career in public service, I have supported common sense pro-life measures that protect women and unborn children. All too often, women are faced with unplanned pregnancies, and they experience condemnation instead of compassion. These women shoulder despair, pain, and judgment when they should receive comfort, assistance, and reassurance. These mothers should always know they have support as they face challenging years ahead. Here in the Senate, I am proud to pledge my support for several pro-life bills.
So both of Nebraska's United States senators are standing up for life and encouraging, welcoming, and thanking all those who participated in the National March for Life in D.C. last week. Nebraskans need to know that. And here at NFA, we're proud to be your voice at our state capitol for pro-life and family values. Nebraska Family Alliance is committed to influencing policy, mobilizing prayer, and empowering people so that marriages and families thrive, life is cherished and protected, and religious liberty is affirmed and celebrated. We'll be back next week with more information to keep you connected to the capitol and the issues that matter most. I'm your host, Nate Graz, Policy Director for Nebraska Family Alliance, hoping you'll join us again next week. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.